Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Love in Basketball podcast. I'm your host, Adam Gearlock. Thank you so much for being here, and I'm so grateful for each and every one of you. The Love in Basketball podcast explores servant leadership on and off the court, seeking a fuller picture and deeper understandings of this vision for leadership that holds people and results together. Today's episode is a conversation with Jason Burton. Coach Burton is the head women's basketball coach at Texas A&M Commerce, where he's entering his seventh season as head coach of the Lions. Coach Burton is coming off the most successful season of his tenure, which featured a 28-3 record, Conference Coach of the Year honors, qualifying for the NCAA tournament for the second year in a row, and becoming the winningest coach in school history. Just as Willis Wilson helped to inspire this podcast for me, so did Coach Burton. His openness and use of words like love, heart, and listening as core concepts to his leadership jumped out at and resonated with me. He was open about this vision for leadership and servant leadership in a way I hadn't heard before in college basketball. And after connecting with him further, I felt that others might be able to benefit from a similar dialogue. I found this to be a conversation filled with grace and strength. Coach Burton and his program underwent true heartbreak in his first season as head coach of the Lions, with two student athletes, Aubrey Butts and Devin Oliver, being killed in a car accident. Coach Burton shares his story of heartbreak and loss and moving towards greater ways of serving and being with each other. Along the way, he explores what it means to invest in people, combining support and challenge, and the power of a hug. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Jason, I'm so grateful to be with you here today. You and I connected in some shared online spaces together, and I had the pleasure of experiencing your leadership and your servant's heart in those forums. Your use of words like love, heart, listening, all with the welfare of student athletes in mind, really jumped out to me. For better or for worse, I have found that these are not the words that we typically associate with leadership in college athletics. When I bring up those words, love, heart, listening, servant leadership, what comes to mind for you?
I mean, for me, that is, I've been very fortunate, blessed to be in an environment, especially as of late, where that's kind of the established culture. You know, when I first got hired here, as the head women's basketball coach, this is my second stint here, but when I got hired back as the head women's basketball coach, Ryan Ivey was the athletic director. He's now at Stephen F. Austin. These are things he embodied, the servant leadership. And the head football coach at the time was Kobe Carthel, who's also at Stephen F. Austin and would be great for your podcast. But as you know, football runs Texas, right? And so as the football coach, those are things that he talked about. And then when Ryan Ivey left, we got Tim McMurray, and he's been my athletic director for the last 4 or 5 years. And that's also, you know, things that we talk about, things that are the norm here. And it, like you said, it's not the norm everywhere, but I think it's a lot easier to have that mentality, that mindset when it comes from above. And I think it's easy for my assistant coaches and my players to embody those things when it comes from me. And so that's what I want any program that I'm involved in. I would hope that those are the things that people think about when they think about my programs that are led by me. I think we've gotten so many recruits, so many players because of the environment. You know, I don't think you have to have, you know, the best facilities, the best this, the best that necessarily when your culture can speak volumes. And a lot of times we get players because of our players are our best recruiters, and they're our best recruiters because they genuinely love playing here. And it's because of the environment that it's not just about, you know, what they can do on the floor, but it's actually a family atmosphere. And so to me, that's what sports should be about. That's what I want my home to feel like. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, we're doing this in a way that they can go out into the real world and make this real world a better place.
Yeah. What was that like for you when you first transitioned into the environment there, the culture at Texas A&M Commerce? You mentioned that Ryan Ivey embodied it. What was that transition like for you, maybe coming from an environment that wasn't built on servant leadership into one that really embodied servant leadership? What was that like for you?
I've just been a couple places. And I don't necessarily need to say the places or who I was working for at the time, but the environment was strictly transactional, strictly business. Mm-hmm. was about wins and losses, was about the bottom line. Sometimes you get into this pressure cooker when you're in athletics that, you know, there's a pressure to win, and there's a pressure to win at all costs. And it doesn't matter how you treat people. It's just, this needs to get done. And it needs to get done this way. And when you're in those types of environments, it's tough to sustain that success because people get worn thin very easily. Mm. And I think it's tough to not only maintain relationships within your own staff, but maintain relationships across campus and you know, to have the environment. We win in so many sports here. We win across the board here. And I think that's because the culture that we have here is so communal, and it's we want each other to win, and we want to support one another. And when you have that type of environment, that love that's shown, and not for any other reason than that's just who we are. That is an environment that you can thrive in, and it's an environment even when you have some down times that you can bounce back from, right? Because those down times don't last because there's so much success around you and so many people pulling for you to have success. It's not just the individual silos that people can sometimes get into within their sport or within their department. But I think when you're in those environments where it's only about you and you're the only thing that matters, you can very easily make people not want to help you. And I think that's why servant leadership is so key, because when you show people that it's not just about you, that you want them to be successful too, they're like, man, it's all because what you said, like, it's so abnormal in some places that they're not used to that. It's like, man, that coach really is like the last person that worked here wasn't that way. I don't know, why is he this way? And they're intrigued. They want to help. And when you have an environment that everybody has that mentality, man, it's a beautiful thing. It makes going to work so much better. It makes it easier for a young assistant coach that may not be making the most amount of money, that even though they're working a lot, and it doesn't feel bad because they feel like they're a part of something that's bigger than themselves. They feel like they're appreciated. They feel like they're valued. And I think sometimes that's something that's so underrated, because there's so many coaches that are like, man, I don't care how much money I make, I don't want to be in that environment. And I've been there before, where you're making a good amount of money, you're living in a good place, but the environment that you go to on a day-to-day basis is not one where it's worth the money, it's worth the job. You would rather be doing something else than to work in that environment. And so because I've been a part of some of those places, that's never something that I wanted to happen or have happen or have somebody feel like when I was the head coach.
Yeah. I heard you highlight, Jason, that, you know, perhaps you concern yourself with helping your assistant coaches to feel valued as a part of just their daily experience, helping your student athletes to feel valued as a part of just your daily experience. As a servant leader, as someone who tries to embody servant leadership, what do you concern yourself with for your assistant coaches, for your staff, for your student athletes, for those you interact with on campus? You know, what do you concern yourself with there?
What do you mean, what I concern myself with?
What's at the forefront of your mind?
There's a lot. I mean, to be honest, there's a lot. And I was fortunate as a young assistant coach when I first got hired to work for who's a guy who's still my mentor to this day. Sam Walker, he's a head men's basketball coach here. I got hired here right out of college. And right away, he entrusted me with his program. I mean, your assistant coaches and your players pretty much make or break your success as a coach. And for him to hire me when I was 21 years old, but not just hire me, he gave me, he put so much trust into me to go and recruit, to do pretty much, I did pretty much everything but scheduling. And he took a risk on somebody that was younger than half the players on the team. You know, I got seniors on the team that are 22 and 23, and I'm 21 when I got hired. And I think that belief that he had in me, and not just the belief that he had in me, but he wanted me to grow, and not just grow. He wanted to see me go elsewhere in the climb of my career. He's somebody that has helped me to get every single job that I've attained. When I left here, I went to a mid-major Division I school, and he was the first one to make a phone call for me. I was a high school head coach. I mean, he's making multiple calls, and not just that, but he's helping me to game plan. Like, he genuinely wanted me to be successful, and then I was able to come back here and be the head women's coach while he was the head men's coach. And, you know, you talk about somebody that came to my games when he didn't have to. He's in the middle of the season, but that supported me, that went out of his way to make sure I'm successful. You know, what I have in him, I have a loyalty that is – there's nothing I wouldn't do for that man. And so in the same time as me being the head coach, I'm trying my best to make sure that on a day-to-day basis, my assistant coaches get better. And that is, and the way you do that is to allow them to actually do their jobs. There's so many times where coaches hire people and they don't give them any freedom to do their job. And so you lose out on creativity that assistant coaches can bring to the table. You lose out on the things that you can do. Like, my assistant coaches allow me to be a better husband and be a better father because I can actually trust them to do their job. And I think a lot of times coaches don't do that. They micromanage. I've been in situations where I've been micromanaged and I have to do things a certain way, when if they're good, if they weren't good, you shouldn't hire them. And if they are good, you should allow them to do their job, right? And so, you know, one of the biggest things that I think is tough to give up, but when I finally started doing that is practice, giving up, like, let my coaches do drills in practice. They're never going to know how to run a team or run a program or have the confidence to, when they actually get that job, to run a team and be confident about it, if they don't get a chance to run drills, if they don't get a chance to speak in scouting reports and get a chance to speak in front of the team to lead things. But when I did that, it allowed me to see that sometimes you need to step back and see a bigger view of everything that was going on. And it allowed me to coach the details. The details are so important, and it allowed me to be a better coach because I empowered them to do their job. And that's a big deal in this. And so for my assistant coaches, that's something that I want to do. That's not necessarily serving, but it's trusting. But one way that I serve and I want my coaches to serve is nobody's above any job. So whether that's bringing things to the bus, whether that's taking their share of time doing the laundry or and sweeping the floor or picking up after players from time to time. Like, I really believe that in every sense of the statement, you should leave a place better than you found it. Right. So we go to somebody's locker room, and even if we didn't, you know, pick up we didn't create the trash or create the problem, it should look better than when we first got there. And if you have that mentality in everything you do, it just goes such a long way. And I want my players to see that if the head coach is willing to do this and do that, then I should be willing to do that as well. And I think that's the whole idea behind serving leadership, is that nobody's above anybody. We're in this together. And I've just found that when you're in an environment where you feel like you're in this together, it's not one person dictating, that you tend to get more productivity from everybody, more buy-in from everybody. And that culture can grow into something that, and we're coming off our best year in school history. And I don't think that our team was just that much more special than some of our previous teams, but I think every year we've gotten just a little bit better because the culture over time has just gotten a little bit better. And you make up for so many deficiencies in other areas when there's a complete buy-in from everybody on the team. When I can play my player number 10 or 11 and get the same productivity from you know, my third or fourth player, quote unquote. When you have that level of trust and that level of buy-in from everybody, or when I'm not playing, I'm still cheering, I'm still doing all the things that I'm still being a great teammate. When it's that environment, there's just so much success that can be had.
Yeah. You bring up this word buy-in, Jason. I think sometimes we might hear the word buy-in as something that we have to force upon others. You have to make players buy in or get them to buy in, right? What's the difference between buy-in that's forced, maybe from a control standpoint, and buy-in that evolves as a result of servant leadership?
Good teams are led by good coaches, and great teams are led by great players. And when it comes from within, like when a player is just like, this is what we do, it's a different level of buy-in. And we got to that point last year where we had seniors and upperclassmen that were just like, this is what we do here. And there was so much self-governance that happened in that locker room because of players that were here previously and the players that were here previously. And it has to start somewhere. But when the team can take ownership of itself, and we're just there to guide and kind of correct, then the buy-in is completely different. And that's why we started getting a little bit better players too, because it wasn't the coaches necessarily doing the sales pitch. It was the players like, hey, this is where you need to come play. What I love about my staff is we can come into a room and we can go at it about recruiting, about X and O's, about game plan, whatever. But at the end of the day, when we walk out, we're all on the same page, no matter what. And when you get to the point where your team is the same way, and it becomes a special thing. And it's taken some time over the years to get to this point. But the root of everything that we've done started with servant leadership and how we've been from the very moment we took over this program. And those are the things that we talk about. I think we talked about it last time that me and you talked off camera, off air.
Yeah.
But when you start hiring, there's certain questions that we ask when it comes to the hiring process. And, you know, you don't always need somebody that's great at X and O's and great at recruiting, but you need people that have a certain temperament. You need people that are willing to be in the weeds. And more than anything, I want people that are going to care and that are going to love, because and I know you're going to ask me about this later on, but love is something that we talk about all the time. And I'm sure you're going to ask a question and I'll get to my heart change and why I became the type of coach that I am. But love has been something that has really changed our program. I noticed that with our players, like when they felt that when the staff loved them and they're like, man, coach, it wasn't like this at a different school, because we're a Division II school that's had so many Division I transfers. They're like, man, coach, this is harder. Like the workouts we do here are harder, but they still want to be here and they still love it here because of the love that they feel, that they actually feel like it's a family atmosphere. And I know that's something that people say all the time. Well, I want to be a part of a family atmosphere, but in a family atmosphere, when there's real love that is taking place, there's so many things that can happen. Like real discipline can take place and real forgiveness and real, but not just that, like, you're able to be hard and you're able to be, have a high demand on people because they know where you're coming from and they know it's not just for them. And they know that, I'm the same person and the staff is the same people on the floor as they are off the floor. And you don't see that everywhere. And I always knew that when I became head coach, I wanted to be different in that aspect. Like, I'm not going to be somebody that treats them one way on the floor and then doesn't have a relationship with them off the floor. This has been the toughest year of my career, and I'm coming off the best season of my career, but it's been the toughest year of my career because, you know, we're in a place where you can't hug, right? You can't see faces all the time. Like, we're wearing masks in practice, so you can't necessarily see that I'm smiling when I'm saying this.
Yeah.
So you can't see the place of love it's coming from, but we're a staff that, if you come into our office here, you come into our space, we're going to hug you. No matter who you are, we're going to hug you. We're going to treat you like family. You know, you go home and you haven't seen mom in a long time, and you walk in the house, mom, like, where's my hug? Like, you're gonna hug your mom, and that's how we're gonna treat you when you come to this place. And that level of, I feel like I'm at home, has allowed a young lady from Russia who is, you know, hadn't been home in 3 years. She played for me. She transferred to me from a Division I school, played her senior year, and she's now in her second year on my staff. And she feels like she's at home because she feels like she has brothers and sisters on this staff, and that she has community here that actually loves and cares for her. And that's when you get to that point where skin color doesn't matter, where you're from doesn't matter, your social status doesn't matter. You're gonna get treated like family regardless. It's taken this place, and it's taken this environment to a whole other level.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you introduced love and your heart change at this point in the conversation, and let's get into it right now. This is the Love and Basketball podcast, right? You know, not always, but many of the times those who walk the path of servant leadership have had some kind of crossroads or activating moment that led them to choose the path of servant leadership as opposed to something else, or maybe the path that they had been on. That was certainly the case for me. You know, I tell my story oftentimes elsewhere. I was passed up for jobs I thought I deserved, and a relationship ended. And those two things led me to take a long, hard look at myself and try to align more with the person that I wanted to be rather than the person that I discovered that I had become. Right. And so, you know, when you mentioned your heart change. So I just want to open it up to you at this point, Jason, and say, you know, what was this heart change? What was the crossroads, that activating moment that you found yourself on that path towards servant leadership?
So I was hired here. Let me backtrack first. I think when you get into this business, you know, most of us are, a lot of us are athletes that decide to coach. And so we're competitive by nature. Hmm. And, you know, I got into this business, and a lot of times you don't realize how hard it is to coach. And you don't realize how hard it is to climb the ladder in coaching. And probably like you, you know, I felt like I should have been in the mix for some jobs. There are other jobs I should have got, and I didn't get them. And part of that is just me being naive and not knowing that there's so much that I don't know. There's so much experience I don't have. But I had a goal when I first got into this business. I was hired at 21. I said, I want to be a college head coach by the age of 30. And that was my goal. And for the first 4 years, I'm here as an assistant coach, and I'm applying for, you know, I get to like 24, 25, I'm applying for head coaching jobs, not knowing I'm not ready for a head coaching job. I think I am, and I think I know all these things, but I thought I deserved the opportunity, but that's just me being young and naive. I go to a mid-major Division I school, and I'm there, and I'm like, okay, well, that climb is going to happen for me soon. Like, this is the step I need to take to – become a college head coach. And at age 27, my boss gets fired, and I'm at a crossroads, and I end up deciding to take over at a high school. And so I shift from college to high school. And so I say, hey, you know what? I'm not a college head coach by the age of 30, but I'm a high school head coach. I'm going to be the best high school head coach to ever do it. I'm going to be the Coach K of Texas high school basketball. And we win one game that year.
Wow.
My first year as head coach, we won one game, and for some reason, God opened this door and allowed me to come back to where I started and be the head women's basketball coach here. And I never thought I'd be coaching women's basketball. Me and my mentor, Sam Walker, we joked about it a lot because he was the men's coach. So he said, "Man, just come back and we'll do this thing together." And I actually the opportunity actually presented itself, and so. My mindset, it shifted again. It's like I'm 28 years old. I'm a college head coach. I did it. Like, I'm a college head coach by age 30. But now, or I'm 28, and let me be a Division I head coach by age 30. Let me do that. And, you know, I'm just concerned with recruiting. I'm trying to get my team to be the best team I can get. I'm trying to get as much talent as I can. I'm trying to hire the right staff. 2 months onto the job. I mean, I'm telling you, I came here. I put my stuff in a dorm. I said, just give me a place to lay my head. I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to be at home that much. I'm going to be working. I'm going to be grinding. And so they gave me a dorm. I'm there for 2 months. I get my team together. I finally feel like I'm feeling great about our situation. And I finally move into a little spot, and I've unpacked my bedroom, and that's it. There's so much more I got to unpack. I get a phone call, and long story short, two of my players had passed away. I had four players in summer school. All four of them got in a car accident. My two players that were in the back seat passed away.
Wow.
And so, like, my mindset the whole time was just, let's get in, let's win this thing, and let's get out. And it never really was about, you know, the players, the relationship with the players, the relationship with the players' families. And I'm like, I'm doing this all wrong. Like, how do I put together this team that lost the heart? It was my captains. It wasn't just two players. It was my two captains that passed away. And it's like, you know, how are you going to do this now? Because now it's not about wins and losses. This the accident happened in the summertime. It wasn't to me. I wasn't just going to replace my two captains, right? And you just saw heartbreak, and you saw not just my team, but it was a community. These two young ladies that passed away were special. The school was kind of empty at this point in time. It was June 3rd when it happened, but on June 4th we had a candlelight vigil, and you see 2,000 people show back up to campus that weren't on campus for these two young ladies. I'm like, what kind of ladies do you have to? What kind of people do you have to be to have this many people show up for you that weren't on campus before? And then these things started happening, right? Like one of the young ladies, Aubrey. She with Devin. Devin loved Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant had just came off winning NBA MVP, right? And but everybody had got on social media. They were like, "Hey, Kev, like you got this girl loved you. You got to shout her out." He puts a picture on his Instagram of this girl from Commerce, Texas. I'm like, "What? Who is this young lady?" Right? Yeah. And then so they saw the people saw Kevin Durant do this. They're like, well, Aubrey loves Beyonce. Let's get a Beyonce. And so they're hitting her up on social media. There's no response. And it's a couple weeks have gone by. I got to replace them. I'm at breakfast with a recruit. I get a random number calling me from New York. Pick up the phone. Like, hey, this is Yvette. I'm Beyonce's publicist.
Wow.
I want to send you and your team and the families, I want to send y'all 100 tickets to Jay-Z, Beyonce are coming to Dallas. We want to do something special for you. I'm like, I think that might be a violation with the NCAA, but, you know, if you want to send something. So they end up sending 50 tickets, and we're able to do something special. But I just got to thinking, like, man, they had such an impact. These two young ladies had such an impact on two of the biggest stars in the world hit us up, and then not just that, but this community. And so that year, it's about – you know, making sure every young lady on our team is okay and mentally, physically, emotionally. And I had to, at times that year, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm having to talk to our new captain. She was the driver of the car. And I'm having to make sure she's okay. And we got to the point where, like, we need to have individual meetings with our players every week. And it's not a basketball conversation. It's just a conversation about life. How are you doing? How are your academics going? How's your family doing? And that's something that we've done ever since then. And I'm like, as a coach, I probably wouldn't have done that had that accident not happened. Like, we wouldn't be really checking in on our players because of that. And I had to shift my focus of just make just me to being more relational. The two players had passed away. I had not talked to their families until I talked to one of the set of parents in the hospital, another set of parents at the funeral home, because she had passed away on the scene. And so, like, that hit home. Like, what are you doing? Like, you hadn't talked to these people's parents. They're people. And it hit me that how selfish I was being as a coach and as a person, like, that it was just about my climb, my ascent to be the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are you really going to get out of that by just winning games? Like, and for me, when we started investing in people, we've gotten such a reward from that. Like, the reason our program has gotten better is because we've invested in people, and we're seeing immediate return on every time somebody graduates. It's just one more person that's coming back and feeding back into our program. And that's what's great. I've been able to hire so many former players to be a part of our staff, but even the ones that aren't officially on staff, they come back, they support, like, and they tell stories, and they tell stories about me oftentimes, and it's fun because they get to unite on the 6 a.m. Friday lane slides that we have all the time.
Yeah.
And, but when it started being about love and it started being about players, I've gotten so much more from it, from just being a good person and caring about people instead of just caring about wins. And the wins have come. Like, I'm not I'm now the all-time winningest coach here. And but it hasn't been about, hey, let me win and leave. Let me win and leave. It's we've built something so special here, and it's because of, unfortunately, an accident that shifted my whole mindset towards, are we really serving these people? I've seen such a benefit in what this program now is on this campus and in this country, and it all started because of a shift in mindset, and that's been my mentality. Like, one of the questions I ask on interviews now are, what is your definition of a servant leader? Like, I ask that when I'm interviewing for assistant coaches, and some people have never heard the concept, and doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you can't learn, but you better have some kind of concept of that to be a part of this staff, because that's what we're going to do. And our staff is so amazing because they're so selfless. That selflessness is what's created this environment that we have here. And we're big on community service, we're big on giving back now. And I just think some of those things don't happen if that shift for me doesn't happen. And so they're always – it's Devin Oliver and Aubrey Butts, and so they wore 15 and 25. And so we have hashtag 1525 on all of our stuff. One of our rituals now is when we leave our locker room, their pictures are on the wall. We touch their pictures before we take the floor. They're just always going to be a part of my legacy now, because they're who really shaped me to go down a different path and be a different person, be a different coach. And what amazing young people and young families that they have. But I tell you, that shift for me was monumental, just for my growth and for the growth of this program.
Jason, I appreciate you being so open and vulnerable here today and telling this story. I know it can't be easy to relive that and recount that. And I'm inspired listening to you talk about the shift in you as a result of Devin and Aubrey's passing. And I'm sure that they're listening to this, recognizing how you've honored that loss. It's such a powerful story for our listeners. And I just thank you for being open and vulnerable and speaking and telling that to us here today.
Well, no, I appreciate it. I think that, you know, it's hard not to be that way. It's just so much of culture is about, well, who's number one, who's the best. You're always hearing debates on ESPN, who's the greatest this, who's the greatest that. And so it's like a natural thing to want to be the best coach you can be. And don't get me wrong, like that's still in me, but it's not 100% what it's all about for me, right? Like there's always going to be a winner and a loser every game. And if all of your happiness is coming from, did I win that game or not, then you're going to probably be unhappy a lot more than you are happy. And so I'm glad I learned that at an earlier age than way down the line. I could be somebody that's still just chasing after jobs and chasing after things, man. I'm just a firm believer that God's going to open doors for you when they're supposed to be open. And sometimes the door that you think you want to go in is not going to be open for you, and that's not what's meant for you. And I never thought that I'd be living in the city that I am, but now my wife, I never want to leave. Just built a house here. And when you allow God to use you the way he wants you to use you, different things can open up, man. And so, but it really is like, that was my mentality. I think that's a lot of young coaches' mentalities that it's all about job title and it's all about status. And you find very quickly that those job titles and those statuses don't necessarily mean anything. And for me too, I talked to my brother about this at length. Like, if I ever were to take another job, the most important thing to me is who am I going to be working for? Because that environment that you're going to be in is going to dictate your day to day, and you're not your day to day wins and losses necessarily, but your day to day happiness. Like, I want to be in an environment that talks about love and talks about servant leadership. One of the things that, that we do here is we compete for community service hours. Like that embodies servant leadership. Like who's going to have the most community service hours this year? Who's giving back, and what are we doing to help make the people around us better? That's something we talk about on the floor here. And just in life is, man, surround yourself with people that are trying to make you better, but the best person on the floor and the best person in the room is the person that makes everybody else around them better. Yeah. And that's my job as a head coach, is to make the people around me better. From my manager to my players to my staff, is that's what I try to do, is to make them better.
Yeah. You highlighted this beautiful shift in you when you talked about your heart change and your shift towards servant leadership. The shift was the focus from me, me, me to the relational aspect. And that's one of the shifts that we undergo when we walk the path of servant leadership, from seeing a focus on the industrial, you know, where we see people as objects or irrelevancies to ignore, as something or as something for us to use, to seeing people fully as other people. You highlighted investing in people as something that that you try to embody in your program. What is it? What does it mean? What does it look like when you seek to invest in people?
I want to highlight two things before I go to that question. I want to highlight two books. One, that first year I was reading a book called Lead for God's Sake. And it was it's a basketball book, actually. It's a book about a basketball coach. He's an all-time winningest coach in the state, and goes to a different school. But it talks about his change. And it was like I was going through the same change this coach had gone through during the season. And so I would recommend that book to anybody. But I'm such a big John Gordon fan now, and John Gordon, all of his books are, you know, you're talking about servant leadership and you're talking about culture. And those are probably two of the biggest themes within his books. And one of my favorite books is Soup. And the short version of Soup is who stirs the pot, right? Mm-hmm. Who stirs the pot matters. So me and you can have the same ingredients, the same recipe, but if you don't make the soup with the same love that I make the soup, it ain't gonna taste the same. Just because we got the same ingredients doesn't mean we're gonna have the same outcome. You know, it's about what we do with those ingredients, and that's kind of my my mindset when it comes to serving leadership, and when it comes to others is. I'm not going to, even though I may have the same pieces as you, I'm not going to do things the same way you do them. And so for me, and it's funny, man, I think my boss doesn't mind me saying this, but we've had so much growth in our relationship because I've been able to be real and be transparent with him. And I think when he first got this job, my current boss, when he first got this job, it was his first athletic director job. And right now, I think he's the best AD out there. But when you first get a job, you don't necessarily know exactly what you're doing, and you don't know who to listen to sometimes. And we had some young people on staff that probably didn't give, weren't allowed to have as many mistakes made as maybe some young on the staff would now. And his kind of mindset was to get rid of people they weren't living up to his standards, and he has high standards, and that's what makes him great. But there was a time in our relationship that he had an issue with one of my assistant coaches, and he wanted me to get rid of her. And I had to let him know that me and you aren't the same in that regard. I hired her for a reason. She's very good at these things. And yes, she's young, so she's going to have some room for growth. And I think that's kind of what makes, you know, me different. And that's kind of my part of my servant leadership, is that you got to allow for room for growth. Got to allow for love and for grace to happen, because if every time somebody makes a mistake, you're just going to get rid of them, or you're going to move on to the next person, whether that's, you know, my starting point guard makes a mistake and I'm quick to sub her out. Like, if nobody's ever allowed to make a mistake, then they're never going to be the best version of them that they can be. And so that's kind of what our culture is about, and how we love and how we show that love, is that we realize that mistakes are going to be made, but it's going to be about, hey, what do you do now that you made that mistake?
Yeah.
You know, what I have a quote on my wall right here. Character is tested, revealed, and further developed by the decisions we make in the most challenging times. You got to allow for people to make mistakes and grow from those mistakes. And you got to help people to develop their character. And we're in such a, when you're a coach, you're in such a rare position to really mold and shape people. And how we mold and shape people in this environment is going to really dictate a lot of their perception and their thought process for the rest of their lives, and how they do things. You can hold people to a high standard and also help them to get there. And I think some people have greatness in them, but don't know how to necessarily tap into that. And it's our jobs as coaches and mentors is to help them to pull that greatness out of them. And if they don't make mistakes, they're not going to be as great as they can be. And so that's our mentality.
Yeah, I love how throughout our conversation, you've demonstrated, you know, this trust, allowing others to make mistakes, you know, wanting others to bring out all the great things about them to the forefront, and allow an individual, you know, whether it's on your staff or whether it's your team or your players, to reach their highest potentials in whatever unique form that might take place. Earlier, we talked about forcing buy-in versus self-governance and allowing a team to create buy-in themselves. And to me, that's an expression of a team's highest potentials versus imposing a ceiling of what the highest potentials might be if that buy-in were forced. And here I hear you talking about this trust, allowing others to make mistakes, but then holding to a high standard as well. Perhaps a combination of support and challenge. A high standard might be that challenge aspect, but then having that high standard with love being that support aspect. And often we experience one without the other. Support without challenge, low standards, right? Challenge without support might be this hierarchical leader, this domineering command and control coach that we often experience in college athletics. What does it look like to hold support and challenge together? What does it look like for you and your leadership, you know, when you hold someone to a high standard with love?
So I'm going to speak on some examples that have happened, and I won't necessarily win because say when, but there's an instance where, you know, player gets in trouble and they just have a high expectation based on their past that, I'm in trouble again because they've gotten in trouble before for whatever reason, that that's either going to be the end of the line for them or now their coach is going to view them as X, Y, or Z. And so they already start acting differently because they're anticipating how you're going to act because of their past situations that they've been in. And I think that's so – we talk about playing chess, not checkers, right? You can't treat everybody the same. It's not checkers. We're playing chess. And so on. You look at a chessboard, every piece is different. Every piece operates differently. And if you have this cookie-cutter mentality where they did this, this is the punishment, but you never try to figure out the why, then you're not really showing that love and you're not really bringing out the best in people. Sometimes, yeah, they made a mistake and it may be the same mistake that somebody else has made, but why are they making a mistake and why are they operating this way? And when there's so many people that, especially that we deal with that they've been in environments where the only consistent person in their life has been one parent, single family home. You know, my mom's been there or my dad's been there and that's been it. And everybody else, when things get rough, they leave. And then when they come here and they see, yeah, he's going to hold me accountable to what I've done, but he's still not, he's not going to treat me any differently. I got to do whatever I have to do to get back right. And whatever discipline or punishment I have, but we try to make the discipline fit the crime. So if it's an academic deal, you're missing class, you miss whatever, but it's academic related, running is not necessarily the solution. The solution is providing the right help and making sure you, You got extra study help. You got this tutoring. You, whatever it is to fix the problem, right? And sometimes with other situations, it's just the discipline needs to happen, but then your heart and your the way you treat that person doesn't need to change. And when they see that consistency, they change because they're like, well, maybe this person is different. Maybe they're not going to leave. And maybe I can grow. Maybe I can really tap into who I really am because this person really does believe in me and I can make the mistake and still be treated the same way as I was before. And so I think those are just ways that looks like with us and our program, how we do things.
Yeah. The word love has come up a lot in our conversation here today. And I recognize that we've been using the word without, you know, maybe it means something different for you or for me or something different for our listeners. Right. What do you mean when you say love? What does love mean for you?
I'm a Christian man. So I'm a firm believer in Jesus and how he treats people and how he treats everybody the same. And he allows for people to make mistakes and still loves you anyway. And so for me, it's realizing that we're all human. I know the mistakes that I've made in the past. And I know that if I didn't have people that allowed me to have second chances and allowed me to make mistakes and realize that I'm not perfect. If I wasn't shown that grace, and I think that's a word that is synonymous with love, is grace, allowing for mistakes, allowing for growth, then I probably wouldn't be the person I am today. And I think that is the main way that you reach people. The main way that you change people is through that consistently being there for people, no matter what they do, no matter what they've done. It doesn't mean that you have to like what they've done, but it means that they're human and we're going to treat them as such and we're going to allow for them to learn from their mistakes. Otherwise, if you don't ever allow for anybody to learn from their mistakes, then you're going to be by yourself, right? Like nobody's perfect except for him. And so for me, that's it's being there for people without conditions and allowing for conversations to be had, man. I think that's something that this country needs right now. You've seen all this division the last, 2020, this on different subjects, and there's not a whole lot of this conversation that is had to find out why you think the way you think, and you can find out that and learn and get understanding, then growth happens. But that love for me is just that consistently being there for somebody despite what they have done, despite the mistake they've made, is continuing to be there. You really figure out what love is when you have a kid and a kid's going to make so many mistakes, but you're always going to be there for that kid no matter what. And you're always going to help them through the process and help them be better. And I'm not saying you have to treat everybody as if that's your kid, but there's a certain way that if we did treat people that way, if we thought of people as if it were our family member, as if it were our brother or our sister, if we thought of everybody that way, and that's how I tend to try to treat my student athletes, is they're one of my own. And how would I want somebody to treat my son? And you have these conversations with recruit parents, right? And a lot of times you're talking to people that they're from a different state. They're sending their kid miles and miles, thousands of miles away or hundreds of miles away, and they're trusting you with their most prized possession. Yeah. I have to treat them like they're my own. And so that's what love is treating people like they're your own, like they're related to you. And how would you want somebody to treat, your family, your sister, your brother, your wife, whatever. Like, that's what we want to do when it comes to our program. And that's what love means to me.
Yeah, you've highlighted, again, there's that theme of allowing others to make mistakes. You mentioned we're all human, providing second chances for others and showing grace. And, something that I'm picking up on is there's this, like, staying in the relationship and doing what you can.
That's some staying power.
Yeah, well, staying in the relationship and doing what you can to, like, help make it work. to seek to understand, to learn from the other person. What's between this and the my way or the highway approach, where if you don't perform or if you make a mistake, hey, we're going to get someone else in there who can, right? I think we've all heard something to that extent, in this business. So what's between those two things? What's between, if you make a mistake, you're out of here, we're going to get someone who can do it better. And like trying to make it work and staying in the relationship and showing grace and showing love.
Well, for us, there comes a point where there has to be some removal from the team. And sometimes it just happens, they remove themselves because sometimes the culture just takes on this identity of its own where you're like, man, I just don't want to be a part of that. But at some point, as the head coach and the leader of this program, I'm looking at everybody, right? And if this one person can't figure it out and becomes cancerous, you don't want that to damage everybody else, right? And so it's kind of situational when it comes to our program. It's allowing for those second chances, but we're very transparent when it comes to how we deal with conflict. And conflict resolution. And part of that is, for me, is to hold me accountable. So if we have a situation that comes up, I'm going to tell the team, hey, this is what happened. This is the punishment for X, Y, and Z. So that way I'm holding myself accountable too. And but if it comes to a point where you feel like this individual is hurting us overall, then you have to remove that person. But it's not, for me, it's not the first instinct. It's not, they didn't do that right, they're gone. Or a lot of times it's not the second time. Like, sometimes you got to take into account, again, what's going on at home. And I think a lot of time you don't figure out what else is going on. Like, we just see this happen on the floor, this incident happened, I'm mad, they're gone. And if you got to the root of it, you can fix the situation and things can be different. And I think it's, you got to do your due diligence and some coaches just, and not just coaches, whatever environment, some bosses, whatever. Some people aren't willing to actually do that and figure out the why. And that's, figuring out the why and everything is so crucial, right? Like, if I put in a play in basketball and I'm telling them to do this and this, but I don't tell them why, they don't gain that understanding until they really know the why. And I think us as leaders can be so much better when you know why. When you know why people operate the way they operate. But normally, the people that don't end up staying is either because they don't want to do the work or they're lying about what's really going on. They won't be honest and transparent. And those that have good character tend to make it here. And those that have somehow faked the character part and the recruiting process and managed to still get here, they don't stay here very long. Or if they didn't have the character, somehow they develop it and buy into it, like we talked about earlier, that buy-in. They develop, they see what's around them, and the environment pulls them in the right direction.
What do you notice in your student athletes, or what do you notice when you bring a new staff member on who's resistant at first, and then they begin to embody servant leadership more? What are those shifts in behavior that you see in your staff and in your student athletes?
Well, I think the staff, and we do a pretty good job of kind of vetting that and, making the calls you got to make. If you do the homework on the front end, especially with staff members, you can kind of figure that out, right? You can call a former boss, or you can figure out enough people that know this person that you can know whether they're going to fit in your program or not. But like I told you, I have one coach, Coach Taja, on my staff. She's not a hugger. And I think Jean Marie, who's also on my staff, when they first got here, they were like, man, y'all hug a lot. This is what we do. And eventually, over time, I've noticed they just became more and more comfortable with it. And then COVID hit, so she's probably happy right now that there's no physical contact. There's a lot more distance that's going on. But those are things that I was in the staff. And the players, you kind of know some resistance if they're not used to that at first. And that can look different in different people. We do a lot of what may seem like silly stuff, At the beginning of the year, every year, we do a lot of team building stuff. And you can see the people that are engaged, and they're engaged because they've either been here and they expect it, or like this is new to them. And they don't really want to open up. But you can see over time, as we do more things like that, and as we are the same people from day one or from the start of the recruiting process to they've been here a couple months, you see them start softening up and opening up and letting people in. A lot of times people come in with these walls, right? Like they have these walls for whatever reason, whatever happened in their past, their environments they've gone in, and they're here just to play basketball, and or they're here just to do this. And then they see the people around them and they're like, well, okay, maybe I can let my guard down. Or and those, you see those cases more times than not. The other instances, you know, that's just not me, and I'm not going to be that way. And then they're just not happy. And if that's the case, which is rare, I think maybe one person in 7 years has kind of been that type of person. They just tend to separate themselves or leave. And you have that in college basketball. You have a high transfer rate across the NCAA. But from here, we haven't had a whole lot of people leave. And I think that's a indication of what we do here. And even if they don't, even if they leave the team, they don't leave the school because of the environment that they're in here. And so that's kind of us, I guess, for that question.
Yeah, you've talked about the hug a couple of times here. I would imagine that, you know, some coaches might be all about hugs. Some coaches might be might want nothing to do with hugs, whether it's hugging their staff, hugging their players. Might want nothing to do with that. What about a hug is important to you?
It goes back to the love thing. It shows love. Like you think about, and I don't know what your environment was growing up, but you know, whether a parent was mad or whatever, they get over it and they give you a hug, and they let you, a hug just lets you know you're in a safe place, right? Like, hey, you're in a safe place right here. And I think it shows that you care, you know, and that this is not just, it's not just for show. I've been in those environments where this, again, it's not just strictly business. When you're able to hug somebody, it kind of shifts the mood of everything. And I also think, like, you're not going to hug somebody you don't like, right? You may shake somebody's hand you don't like. Like, they make you do that at the end of, you know, shake and end of a game. Or there's so many coaches you don't like. You'll shake their hand, but you won't hug them, right? Or there's so many instances going up in school. You fight somebody, I don't like this kid, but the teacher said I got to shake his hand so I can leave this room, and that's what happens. But a hug is different, and a hug, and enough hugs over time will break down so many different walls, right? But that's, we have our core values. So our core values spell out fast pace. That's how we play, right? We play very, very fast. But the fast, it's spelled family, accountability, serve, and toughness. That's the fast. And so two things that we really try to stress is the family atmosphere and that servant leadership. And it's not, so when we talk about serving, it's not just the coaches serving, but I think it's important for the players. To whom much is given, much is required. And so we want to be able to give back. And that's the coaches too. Like, we've been given this opportunity to lead you. It's our job to serve you as well. But that F is so important. That family aspect is so important. And that's something that I grew up in a household where my mom, my dad, they gave me hugs. They gave me love. And I want them to feel that for my players, for my coaches. A lot of our coaches, I got one coach from Russia, I got one coach from Maryland, I got one coach from Oklahoma. None of them are from the state of Texas. So I want them to feel as if they have family here. And I want us to be different than the norm. And I want to be an example that you don't have to do things the old school way or that just tough nose way and be successful. We've been able to have this environment, this culture here, this culture of love, this culture of family, and still win games. There's nothing soft about love. So, like, there's nothing soft about saying that. Like, I can tell my associate head coach that I love them, and there's nothing soft about that. And so it's you're able to do that and still perform at a high level, and that's what we want to do here. And I think when they love each other on the floor, and that becomes coming from the coaches into the players, and they love each other, it's a whole different level of bond, right? It's a whole different level of sacrifice for each other because of that. And that's where that buy-in comes from, because it's not just, I'm not just playing with a team, I'm playing with sisters out here. And so I think that's why we do things the way we do it. And we really want people to feel like, man, I'm not at home, but this is home, because it can be a grind. It is a grind when you're a student athlete, when you're a coach, it's a grind. And the grind becomes okay when you're doing it with people you love doing it with.
Yeah, you highlighted just now in your response that there's nothing soft about love, that I want to show that, you know, we can still love each other and achieve on the court. I might highlight that you're achieving on the court and fulfilling your highest potentials because you love. That one is the direct result of the other. You know, what might you say to someone, a young coach, maybe a new head coach, maybe a head coach that's at a transitionary point in their career? Not all of us, would have these activating moments that we've talked about during our conversation. What might you say to someone who's looking to start this journey? How might someone start the journey of servant leadership, of love in basketball, and love in their leadership?
I think so. Something I did, I just always knew I wanted to get into basketball, right? Didn't know if I wanted to coach, but I wanted to be in basketball. But I always looked at every coach that I've been a part of, and I looked at the good and I looked at the bad, and I tried to take some of the good they did and all the bad stuff that I didn't like about coaches, whether it was a coach I played for or a coach I worked for or athletic director I worked for. I tried to make sure I didn't do the things that I didn't enjoy when I was working for that man or playing for that man. I wanted to make sure that my environment did not include those things, but I wanted to pull the good traits from everybody that I've been a part of. And not just that, man, I'm a student of the game. I think you have to be a lifelong student when it comes to anything you want to be great at and stay great at, you better keep learning. You better always be learning. And so gone into a lot of gyms, I've watched a lot of people coach. I've talked to a lot of people that have had success. I read a lot. And that's one thing I would tell young people is to be a sponge. Be a sponge when it comes to reading. And I'm not a reader. Like, I hate reading. Like, I have a book right here on my desk. And the only reason why I have this book on my desk is because I can go back and highlight. I do audiobooks. I'm an audiobook person. I can hear and retain all day, but I don't have the focus to sit and open a book. But I can make sticky notes and all that. I can go back and I can highlight, because there's always crucial, tidbits I want to make sure I remember and I write down and put into. I take a lot of quotes and I put it into our player manuals and our player books so I can give them the highlights of things. But those two things did so much for me, and being a sponge and going to people's gyms and talking to people and having conversations and having a mentor. The mentors I've had have been people that I respect. I respect the way they carry themselves. I respect the way they lead. And I want to take as much from them and steal as much from them as possible. And that's what you watch any coach now, and they're taking something from somebody they got somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. The best coaches are able to take bits and pieces from some of the greats and put it together and make it their own. And that's the last part of it, is you got to make it your own. Hmm. You can't just try to duplicate what somebody else is doing. It's not going to work. That's what I said about the soup deal. Like, I mean, you can have the same ingredients, but it's never going to be quite the same. So you better tweak some things and make it your own, right? Add your own spices, change a couple things up and make it your own. And that's what has allowed me to have the success that I've had, is doing a lot of reading, doing a lot of, talking to other people, being a sponge, and then when you get here, having the confidence to do it and then change the things that don't work. Like, there's gonna be a lot of things that don't work, and you can't just be that stubborn that you don't change it. And because how the people you're leading take information is very important. And if your leadership style didn't work for how they take it, then it's going to be probably better that you change than they change, right? Or at least find a way to meet in the middle. But you got to find a way to connect to those, to those people that you're leading.
When you go back to your heart change, to the death of Devin and Aubrey, what were those first couple of steps that you took to shift from me to the relational aspect of your leadership?
A lot of tears that went out first, and you're like, man, what, why? Then I would say in my spiritual walk, I was in a different place. I was in a pretty good place with my walk at the time. And immediately, and having conversations with people like my mom, you realize you're there for a reason. And the reason had nothing to do with basketball. Maybe the basketball comes later on, but I was here for my faith to be able to lead other people in a positive way. And so it was pretty quick that happened, that, you know, you realize the season is not going to be about wins and losses. It's going to be about, how do you build these people back up? How do you help to build these families back up? How do you lift these young ladies that pass away? How do you maintain their legacy? We endowed a scholarship in their name, raised a lot of money to be able to do that through, we put on two galas, I guess you could call them. They raised in auctions, they raised a lot of money to endow a scholarship. And it forced me to get outside my comfort zone in a lot of ways right away. And it forced me to really talk and check on people, because you don't want something else to happen. Like, I was really, this is bad to say, but I was concerned that one of my young ladies might commit suicide, especially the driver. I had two young ladies that were in the car that lived. And you're like, what are they thinking about every day? The only way you figure out how to think what they're thinking about is to talk to them often. And so it forced me to do things that I wasn't necessarily thinking about. I probably wasn't the best X and O coach that year. But I think that the reason we won the games we won that year were because you just had young ladies that played hard. They were playing for something that was much bigger than themselves, right?
Yeah.
And they found something to rally around. And we had like seven newcomers coming in. And so we had this dynamic of people that didn't know Devin and Aubrey, and these people of these returners that did, and a whole new staff. And you're like trying to bring everybody together. And so for us just to be able to function, I had to be different. I think when I first came in, I was so basketball focused. I had to make sure that they knew that I cared, you know, I don't care about what you know until I know how much you care, type of thing. And I think when they realized that I care, the staff cares, and I care about the people I recruited just as much as I care about the people that are returners that I didn't recruit, when they learned that, then we were able to come forth together. And we did so many events off the floor that year that had nothing to do with basketball, but it was just getting to know each other. And that when I saw those things working, I started adding more things. This is how I should be moving forward. Like, this is what it's about right here. Like, you're able to get people to come together and work for a common goal. And not just that, like, you saw the relationships off the floor. It was such a close-knit team off the floor. And you saw people that didn't know each other, they weren't a part of the previous team, still come together and really find common ground and like each other. I knew that we were on to something, and I didn't really know what servant leadership was about. I didn't really know what culture was about, but I knew that we had something special at the time. The more I read, and the more I talked to people and read some more, the more I was like, I think all this stuff that they're talking about really is true. And like I said, John Gordon, he's helped me through a lot of this stuff. I got the one right here, Power Positive Team, you know, Energy Bus was such a big one. But yeah, that event, though, it was significant in many ways for me.
Awesome. Jason, this has been such a beautiful conversation today about serving leadership, about love, about shifting from industrial relationships to relationships where we acknowledge people fully as other people, and that shift in your own leadership from me to the relational aspect and investing in people. What do you hope listeners walk away with from today's conversation?
There's a lot of things I hope they walk away with. One would be what you see in movies, what you see portrayed in the media sometimes, or how you've always known to do it. If you're old school and you're doing it a certain way because that's how the coach before you did it and that's how the coach before, you don't have to do it that way. There's no cookie cutter formula for success. Hmm. And success is not just in X and O's. It's not just in titles. I got my first ring this year as a coach, and really in my career, it's my first ring I got. But one of the most, I think my best coaching job was my first year as a head coach here. We were 14-14, which was the biggest change from the previous year to the next year. As far as win-loss, we took a team that had won 26 games in 5 years and hadn't been 500 at all and found a way to get 500 through tragedy. And so I thought that was my best coaching job because it wasn't just about wins and losses. It was we found a way to make that team to heal that team. And I still have relationships with players from that team to this day. But I want people to know that just you can do things and you can do things the right way and have success. You can love people and you can care about people and you can still have toughness and you can still win games or you can still win in life or you can still lead whatever organization you're in charge of, but you don't have to do it in a way that was the way of the old. You don't have to do it without love. You can do it while loving people, while caring for people. And I think when you do that, I think you're able to have a greater level of success than you may have thought you could have previously. We started out the year 25-0. I don't know how we did that last year. And our leading scorer got hurt in that 25th game. And we probably go 28-0. She doesn't get hurt. She missed the next three games. But we probably would have finished that regular season undefeated. And I think it's just a sign of the culture and the culture change. And I also want to say along with that, our success did not come overnight. Like it's a process. Mm-hmm. And people have to realize it's a process. Culture change is a process. But being a servant leader and being that consistently, you know, being consistent in who you are and doing things the right way, the change may not come as fast as you want it to happen, but it's a lot. It's going to last a lot longer when you do it the right way. Hmm. And the last thing I want to say is just that, you know, I think this country needs a lot more servant leaders. This is not a basketball deal. It's not just a deal for leaders or, you know, of organizations or whatever. It's for people. Like it's just the right thing to do. When you walk into a room and you engage people a certain way, it sometimes allows them to be a different version of themselves than they thought they could be. I hate to say this, and we hadn't talked about race at all, but when I walk into a room, I'm not naive to the fact that I'm a black man, a big black man, and sometimes that can be intimidating to people, especially if you hadn't been around people of a different skin color. And my initial thought, and I don't know why I'm this way now, but I am who I am now, is to be try to be approachable and to let them know right away that I'm not a threat. I'm a good person. So I try to initiate conversation, try to open doors for people. I would randomly buy people meals, because I wanted to change the perception and the narrative that everybody's not the same and we should treat people, we should expect good from people. And the more we do that and the more we show good, the better off this country is going to be.
If you had to use one word, one phrase to describe servant leadership, what might that phrase be for you?
Agape.
Agape.
Agape. So, and it's a different word for love. It's a type of love. It's a love that is about action. Again, it's what Jesus talks about when he talks about the Bible. It talks in the Bible about loving people, and it's about serving others, man. Like, how can you be somebody that is God and capable of everything, but you're willing to wash people's feet and you're willing to hang around people that people don't normally associate themselves with? You're able to you just want to do good for people. You generally want to do good for people. That's to me what it's about, and you don't do it wanting a reward for it. You just do it because I'm able to do it. And me, I've been blessed with so much. And I know there's people that I can help to have success and to put them in a better situation. And I think sometimes people don't do it because they think that they're going to lose out on the blessings that they have. They're afraid of helping others because they don't want to lose what they have. But I think you gain so much more when you do help. And that's that agape love for me is, or agape would be my one word, because it's just being selfless. It's loving. It's loving without expectation. And it's loving everybody, not just who I'm comfortable loving, who I'm comfortable talking to, but it's being the same way towards everybody.
You gain so much more when you do help. I've gained so much from our conversation here today, Jason, and I hope our listeners do as well. Thank you so much for being here, for diving into all these topics with us, helping us to come to a deeper and fuller understanding of what servant leadership means and what about it is important. You gain so much more when you do help, and thank you for all that you've helped us to gain here today. Thank you, Jason.
I think what you're doing is awesome. So thank you for having me on today.
Thank you so much for being here. And I'm so grateful, truly grateful for each and every one of you. You'll find resources from this episode to continue your learnings on servant leadership in the show notes. We will be off next week for the holiday and return on December 31st with a conversation with Gus Arginal, Associate Head Men's Basketball Coach at Cal State Fullerton. Prior to Cal State Fullerton, Coach Arginal served as an assistant coach and then associate head coach at Nevada. His two seasons at Nevada featured 2 Mountain West Conference championships, 2 NCAA tournaments, and a Sweet 16 run. Subscribe now, share with others, and I'd love to hear from you. Rate and comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or reach out with questions, reflections, and feedback via social media. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Gearlock, or Instagram at adam.gearlock, or email me at adam@adamgcoaching.com. I'm so excited to continue to explore servant leadership and share love in basketball with you. Thank you.